Square Talks. Unser Podcast mit den Personalities und Artists in Residence. Are you talking with your sculptures? Are there more person or more things?
Ooh, what do you mean exactly?
When you work on them, do you talk with them? Because it's you're working for hours and hours and it's lonely.
Yeah, I guess.
Do you see them as things or?
I see them as things.
Not entities.
No, I don't see them as entities, but I kind of see them as like vehicles for the imagination. So okay. When I'm making them, I spend time thinking about association and combining with the plastic works, combining different pieces together. And it brings out these different associations for me that takes me to different places and sometimes different memories. And I guess then within that, they feel more like environments to me.
Okay. And what do you like more, the playful side or this meditation and repeating, doing stuff?
I find with a lot of processes when, not all of my work takes a long time, but with some processes that involve a number of days or months or years, you kind of tend to encounter all of those different aspects in the making. So some days you absolutely hate doing the same thing over and over again. And then on others, it feels like this meditative rhythm. And you don't actually want to break that and do something else. So there's many different ways of operating. And I guess, like, for example, with the St. Gallen Clicker, it has many different assets to it and features and forms. So within that, it kind of ended up housing all of these different ways of working, which I guess is like many jobs where you have to do several different tasks.
From hard work to arts.
Yeah.
It's all engaged.
Yeah. I mean, like with the big clicker, because it's got this element of symmetry and it works on such a large scale, it requires a certain level of repetition. Mm. But then there are points, like in the middle, for example, where it can be more singular and that becomes faster. And I enjoyed that because I didn't need to cut 100 small circles to do something.
It was very interesting when you talked this morning about this jump ropes where you cut it all apart and then it were hundreds of pieces or thousands of pieces, these pink ones. Or this was the jump rope.
Yeah. And it becomes like cutting up a really long sausage or like a piece of spaghetti. And that's the funny thing with doing that, where it suddenly became really, really valuable, this rope that they gave to me, because I was like, I've got a limited amount. Even though it's many little circles that I can make out of it, there's only so many I can do, and I need to kind of cover the whole work with it. So they suddenly became really, really valuable and kind of jewel-like in that way.
Yeah, it's really cool contrast to the... to this green and fabric-like stuff.
Yeah. I think I said it earlier this morning in the workshop, where the smallest piece in the clickers gives a sense of scale for the rest of the piece. So in that way, it was quite important. And the pink worked well for me because it contrasted with the green and kind of popped out.
And with the tarmac from the environment now.
Oh, the concrete, yes. Yeah.
So tarmac is the thing on the floor and concrete is the thing on the walls?
Yeah.
It's not tarmac all?
No. Sorry. tarmac is for the roads and that's bitumen.
Tarmac is like asphalt.
Yes, okay. Same. I mean, I think it's the same thing.
Yeah, that's... So, shall we start? Are you ready, Tim?
I thought you already started.
Yeah, I thought we were going.
It was just a warm-up for me.
Okay.
We recorded that. So let's go.
Yes, here's Eric. Yeah. He's recording all.
I've said everything now.
All of it, yeah. Yes.
So okay, we're done now.
Then we can go. So let's start. Welcome to Square Talks. He is a British sculptor and mixed media artist. He works with found materials, using them to raise questions about consumption, worth, materiality and space. As part of the 125th anniversary of the University of St. Gallen, he created the St. Gallen Clicker, who is now part of the university's art collection. And now he has returned to St. Gallen, this time as an artist in residence at Square. Welcome, Louis Davidson.
Thank you. Thanks very much for having me.
Welcome.
And next to us is sitting Tim Kramer, Square Director, and I'm Corinne Redener, also Team Square. Louis, you first came to the University of St. Gallen in 2023. Now you're here again. Do you like this context of business university?
Yes. Well, actually, the first time I came here was in 2014. With a piece that I made called 18 Flags as part of Art at Tell. And yeah, it's a funny one because I had no connection to St. Gallen before I came here. And this project, Art at Tell, was an open call that I just applied to. My old theory tutor from my BA, Joe Melvin, recommended I apply, and I had a work and an idea that I thought suited the context and the project. So this working relationship really came from nowhere. But what I found is that because the university has been so welcoming to my practice and to these projects, and incredibly, I don't know, supportive is the wrong word, but it's been fantastic working together. And yeah, I really enjoy being here in that sense. And I found that I can work here experimentally and conceptually and with the community in a way that I don't find is as receptive in UK institutions.
Okay, cool. You mentioned your work, 18 Flags. You deconstruct some kind of these national flags, and you also deconstruct the myth of nation states. One of your recent works is an installation of illuminated mini tents made from plastic bags. One could read it as a comment on a houses crisis. Mm-hmm. Do you see yourself as a political artist?
I think politics is inherent, and especially when you are working with found materials, and especially when you're working with ubiquitous found materials, they often reflect or play some role within society and within politics, and they relate to the availability of materiality, they relate to labor. They also relate to social hierarchy as well. So I think it's like innate. It's just an aspect of the work that is kind of there in a way. And for example, with a piece like 18 Flags, and also with the tents, and actually as well with the St. Gallen Clicker, there is this notion, I think, that runs throughout all of these works about material transience. And I think it then expands and can be read in a way that looks at societal transience as well in that sense.
Do you think that with the rise of the far right in the last years, that art should, may or must be more political these days?
I don't know. I don't want to say whether art should or shouldn't be anything. I think what art is what it is. And I think that there are artists that naturally work politically. And I think there are artists that make work and they don't intend it to be political, but it holds a huge significance. And I think maybe for me, the key is that something naturally plays out in that sense.
Mm. Tim, what's your opinion about this topic of being political in arts?
A tough question. Because it's so easy to get the wrong direction in this idea of being political. I think it can bounce back to you in a weird and not constructive way sometimes. But I always think that what is really important for artists today is to stand for. To give room to be multi perspective, be against scaling everything down. You know, ambivalence is ambivalent. To be that the right for the human being is to be ambivalent and not to be like one-dimensional. I think this is very important, and sometimes political art, what art is called himself political, is really one-dimensional sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think this is not a good way to react on all those things happening at the moment in the world.
Yeah, because I also, following on from that, because I think that if we say this thing is political, we're also saying this thing isn't political. Mm. And I think that's really problematic. I really love, Gabriela Rosco is one of my huge influences. And with his work, you could look at it in many different ways. And on one level, it's incredibly political. And on another, not at all and completely meaningless. And I think it has this kind of breadth that is really powerful in that sense. Mm-hmm. And I agree. I think when a work is a one-liner, it's a one-liner. it has that one kind of trajectory in that narrative, and maybe that has a power in itself, but it kind of pays the cost in terms of relating to that one thing that it is talking about.
I really love these art pieces who are questioning something, so that there is no wrong or right side. They're only asking questions, and you have to think about as a spectator or something. Even if in theater, in arts, in music, also even in journalism.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the works that I love seeing are the ones that you take something away with you afterwards. I mean, it's a simple thing to say in terms of them having an impact, but it's part of the reason why I like and enjoy working with objects that I find day to day, because it's something that I go away and then I see that object in another context. So it sort of has a relevance when I'm collecting it, when I'm showing it, and then afterwards as well.
So there are different identities you are giving to these objects, or new identities.
Definitely.
New worth.
Yes, yeah, new value and new worth, and actually quite importantly, new context as well. And that I'm interested in that, those components of perception and how when we change, we alter and we displace, what that does to how we perceive something.
In the coming days, you'll be teaching a course with the university's Contextual Studies program. It's called Curating Creativity, Exploring the High-Scale Art Collection. What you'll be doing there with the students?
Okay.
Changing perspectives?
I guess hoping to create an environment for perspectives to enter in discussion and to engage the students with the artworks, and to think about how curation and placement can create meaning and narrative, especially with combining artworks together or the placement of a piece.
Can you make an example?
Well, I guess a good example in terms of placement of an artwork, I've mentioned it before today actually, would be the Giacometti work.
Okay.
Here in St. Gallen, where I I didn't realize this until recently, but the building and the staircase was made for the piece. It was designed in that way. And it makes complete sense to me because you have this tiny, small, fragile figure that deals with the fragility of the human complex. And it's kind of supported and held and put on this pedestal, but it's also surrounded by this heavy, pressuring concrete. So I think there's something to that where it gives Giacometti's work a narrative that you see in some of his other pieces where he builds these kind of minimalist frameworks around the pieces or the plinth becomes part of the work. Mm-hmm. And I think that's exactly what happens here with the architecture.
The building is the plinth.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, completely.
Mm. Mm. Looking at the university's art collection, do you have some works do you find especially remarkable in a positive or negative way?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of biased because before I came here in 2014, I was a huge admirer of Roman Signer's work. And when I came here with Artitel, there was a solo exhibition in the Kunsthalle, and I actually got to meet Roman Signer, and that was a huge thing for me. So I think that's always been a piece that I've stopped to look at briefly, one of his little videos on the way through the hallway, and I kind of love the way that those works operate, that they are fast, simple pieces. And
why is his work so inspiring for you?
I think for me, he's one of those artists that makes me, when I see his work, it makes me feel enthusiastic and it makes me want to make work and it makes me feel like there's a huge open potential of what art can be. And I guess that's because he works very directly and straightforward and with a sense of humor and in a non-complex way. Yet at the same time, there's a complexity to his practice where there's a huge variety where he's pulling in objects. So there's a sculptural element. It's performative. It's filmic. So it just kind of opens up this periphery of feeling that you can do anything and that art can be anything. And that gives me like a huge amount of energy when I see that. And it gives me a huge sense of freedom as well, which is really important. Mm.
And he has also this humoristic, playful side of the art you also have.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. I think that's a big thing that I like about his work. And I'd like to think that that's what makes his work something that I really do admire, is when an artist can work with art history and they can work with scholars and they can work with academics and how their work is cited, but then it also has this level to it where it can also just engage with someone who has very little kind of knowledge of contemporary artwork.
Yeah, and it's still also craftsmanship in the art of Roman Signer.
Yeah. Yeah, and sportsmanship as well, which I think is quite good.
Tim, do you have any favorite pieces in the Sammlung?
Oh, favorite pieces. Yeah, of course.
Or I mean, most hated pieces.
Yeah, no. I have to admit, but it's not very original. I like the Gerhard Richter very much. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. I mean, I always go to, because when we have to go to Square, you have to go one floor up to see him, and I do this a lot. I just go up there and have a look at the Gerhard Richter. There's a lot of work I saw from Gerhard Richter, but I really think this is one of his powerful,
yeah,
most
really
powerful paintings.
Old.
Yeah, and yeah, I don't know. It's so I can't really explain it. It's poetic on the one side, on the other side, it's really, I mean, what I said before, like the different colors. I mean, he's so great with colors, like the different colors in his pictures. And then you can see, now I know that it's a lake, you know, and now, it's, but first of all, I only saw the colors and everything. And then now I see more, more real things in it too. So, yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, you have a Gerhard Richter in the university. This is, it's crazy.
Yes, for me, one of the best aspects at this Kunstsammlung is the fact that it's public. Everybody can see these pieces, this artwork, so you don't have to have special access or pay for it.
I was going to say another piece that I through the course and through talking to Yvette Sanchez before, another work that I kind of came to admire and an artist that I didn't know about before was Wilhelm Mundt and the Trash Stones. And I was watching an interview about him last week, and I find it really interesting how he deals with the idea of opacity within sculpture and form. But something that struck a chord with me in relation to your question earlier about politics was he actually talks with sincerity. And I think that's something that I think is really, really important right now. Is he's got like a level of sincerity to him as an artist, and you can really feel that when you hear him talk about his work and how his practice operates. But yeah, sorry, side tangent.
No. How do you see your St. Gallen clicker in the context of the art collection?
I mean, just first off, visually, it's quite a ridiculous looking artwork. it feels like it shouldn't almost exist. Like it's impractical in terms of how detailed it is, and the fact that that can be a permanent work somewhere is, I think, is crazy and kind of amazing at the same time for me. But yeah, I mean, I guess I would. Like you said, there's some elements in terms of the play within Signer's work and the immediacy that I relate to the clicker, the way that I'm working with day-to-day objects that people use and very honestly having them within the artwork. I mean, there is also another element where I do think about Wilhelm Mundt's Trash Stones and, you know, these forms that are being created from these fiberglass cocoons and then inside them. I guess on a very basic level, you could be like, oh, yeah, there's trash inside them. But I think it's more than that. It's the idea that these are day-to-day used, tired objects and that they're being kind of put into a process to become changed and to be seen within the context of fine art and contemporary sculpture in that way.
Tim, you were at the vernissage accidentally from the clicker in 2023. What were you thinking about this piece of art when you saw it first?
Yeah, it was really accidentally because I had a course at the same time, and Yvette came and said, you have to come with...
Yvette Sanchez is the president of the Kunstkommission.
Yeah. and then I thought, this is the main idea of the square to me, to be to be able to go with the whole course to the vernissage. You know, we went with my whole course, the whole course we went and saw the your speaking and the other and professors were speaking, and then afterwards we went to see your artwork. So I thought from the moment that it's really fitting very well in our art collection here at the university from the beginning, because it's what you said about political art. I mean, it's very difficult to have on the one hand, I think I'm on your side, Corinne. I think an open open artwork is this is what I admire also a lot. But on the other hand, you need to have a real special position on society and what's going on. So this is always something where you have a conflict, but hopefully a productive conflict. I think this is really well done in your artwork. So on the one hand, to really have a clear point of view of what's happening in the world and what have to be fixed or what have to be defended. And on the other side, in the communication with the people, you have to be open. You have to be able to create an open, like Umberto Eco said, it have to be the meanings have to be open for the people at the end. I really think it's really my position that you can't do art if you don't have a clear point of view what you stand for, what you want to say at the end. That's difficult, but I think I really love this in your artwork.
Oh, immediately, thank you very much.
You came a few times, I think 8 times, to St. Gallen to collect the material. And the clicker also grew out of conversations with students and staff. How important were those conversations in the creation and the construction of the clicker?
It's funny because they were important for my experience. And they gave a huge amount of value to my experience and my process of working, but I don't think they actually had any sway of the shapes that I made or how I worked with the pieces. I think that was something private that I kind of took and did on my own independently. And it was almost like I liked the idea that I was taking all these things that had maybe some significance to someone or something like that, and then it was about kind of forgetting about that in a way or treating it differently in the studio.
In German we say es hat Klick gemacht. I think it's the same in English. It finally clicked.
Yeah.
Is this piece of art also a metaphor for learning?
I think in a strange way, yes. I mean, there's something throughout the process where I'm always learning something as I'm going. There's something open-ended about the work. And I think it's a little bit like what we were talking about. Like it changes because the process guides as well. It's a something where I'm putting movements into something and maybe something unexpected will happen. So it doesn't have like one clear message, but it, at the same time, I'm learning through it and I'm kind of challenging my values, or on a very simple, practical level, I'm kind of changing how I'm making it and how it works. So there's patterns that run throughout the piece and they're kind of used as a way to pull the form together to create a whole. There's also like an element where I wanted the work on two sides to have more white coming through and on the other two sides to have more green. So okay. It strobes slightly when you walk around it.
It's a long learning process. I think 2.5 months.
Yeah.
You worked.
Yeah, it's a funny one because it's hard to tie down as a project because there's all the different times where I visited and collected. And there's, yeah, the time in the studio where I was making the work as well and putting it together. So I don't really know in that sense. It kind of blended into the rest of my life at the same time as well and working on different projects.
But you knew when it was done. Is there was a moment
yes.
when you knew it?
Yeah. I was saying earlier there was this point that I think where the moment when it was done for me was when I tried to add something else and it didn't do anything. It didn't change the work at all. So it was like, okay, if I keep this, then I have to change everything and it goes a lot further in the process. Or I take it off and it feels whole at this point. It's where it is. And it's funny. It's quite like a significant point in the work.
going back to the business students you see tomorrow, what can they learn from you as a visual and mixed media artist? Oof. Or as an artist in general, because we are here in the context of a business university, they have other learning techniques than you.
I don't know, actually. I don't often think about that. I kind of think more in terms of what can we connect on, like what are the sort of bridges between, or sometimes what I like is how the students' perspectives surprise me, or they ask me questions about what I do that makes me reassess. So in a strange kind of way, I always feel like I get more from...
So you are hoping to learn from them.
I'm actually learning this week instead.
Yeah. Yep. But on the other side, I mean, you as a yet young artist, can I say this?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
From my point of view, you're in the most capitalistic environment, more than a lot of students here. I mean, the art world is so capitalistic.
Yeah.
Or went capitalistic in the last 20 to 30 years.
Yeah.
So do you see some similarities between the students here? Do you feel something?
I think it depends on the students in the way that there are many different types of artists and they work in different ways. Mm. There are artists out there who will engineer their practice as a means to work with the hierarchy and infrastructure of the art world as a means to build their practice into a successful, stable business. Mm. There are other artists who go to the studio just because they love it, and maybe they're not entirely sure of where it ends up or what's happening. And
where do you see yourself in this?
I don't know. Like, kind of, I find like the interesting thing with studying art that sets it apart from many other fields is that you're not taught about the infrastructure itself. So you learn about the art history. You have discussions about your practice and how that works. Mm-hmm. But it's very rare on courses. I mean, maybe I'm just talking for the UK because that's where I studied, but it's very rare on courses to be taught about how the gallery world works, mm-hmm. how you should operate as an artist. Mm-hmm. So within a lot of the teaching, it feels like an oasis. And in maybe that sense, it's quite nice as this kind of desert island. But at the same time, you kind of need you need some boats and you need to know how to navigate afterwards, how you can work that. So for me as an artist, a large part of my practice has been, a large part of my work is building my practice and creating a means of how it relates and helps me day to day, and how that can form something that I can use and apply my whole life. And then another part is learning about these structures that already exist and these frameworks and how people navigate them. And that's something that I've learned completely independently and something that I've learned after art school and going out into the world. So I don't know in terms of economics students how that relates and in terms of how their course, how that operates.
And did you wish you had more lecturers or advice in your university life?
Become an art entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm. Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's something that is seen to be magic, and I just don't think that's true. I think it's something that could definitely be taught, and it would be useful. Mm. If it was taught. And I think in that sense, I think there's an infrastructural problem there. And I think there's a reason, or that is the reason why you have such a high percentage of people studying art and then such a low percentage of people who continue afterwards being artists. And I would say that's the crux of it.
Yeah, and as success has so many different aspects, and you can predict your artwork of the next 10 years. You don't know what's happening with you and your creativity and your environment. So,
yeah, and I think artists should be told about this and they should know about it because it gives them foresight in terms of how they can navigate situations. And it also gives them knowledge in terms of how they want their artwork to operate. And maybe there's an interesting thing there for creativity and how that can expand. I mean, especially in the past with pieces that responded to the institution and the critique of that. And I'm sure they still exist, but I think we live in like a strange time where the art world struggles financially and artists are generating practices to become more economically sound, but the flip side of that, perhaps more conservative at the same time. And I think if it was teaching within universities about what it was people were stepping into, there could also be discussions there as well. And I think that's interesting.
Looking at your future work, you are working on an upcoming exhibition in Mexico. What are you planning there?
Well, actually, the show opened 2 weeks ago. It's fine. I think I found out about it the day after the opening.
Okay.
It's with a gallery that's run by a couple called Marco and Alma, and they're fantastic. And they're both artists and they run this space. And it's an exhibition in a museum in Leon, in Mexico, and huge number of artists involved. And it sounded like a big organizational project whilst also running two other gallery spaces at the same time. But it's fantastic as well because myself and my girlfriend went over to Mexico in February and we had pieces within a group show then that they were running at Guadalajara 90210, which is the name of the gallery.
Okay.
And they gave us the news before we picked the pieces up to bring them back to the UK that they were going to do this museum show and we could leave the works with them and they would be part of this show. So I've got three small assembled plastic works there, but I've also got two stop frame animations in the show as well that are made using found plastic and also sound samples that I've recorded and paired to each different piece of plastic.
And is the perception different than in Europe or the UK?
Kind of similar, actually, funnily enough. Actually, a lot of the conversations that I had were quite similar, but I don't know. It's an interesting one because perhaps there are overlaps culturally there as well, especially within Mexico City and within the art world there, the contemporary art world. A lot of works travel in the same kind of pools, so perhaps it makes sense that culturally there are quite a few crossovers. I mean, there are differences.
You fit in there.
In some sense, it's a funny one because, I mean, for me historically, like I absolutely love the artists that have come out of Mexico City or the ones that have traveled and lived there, like Francis Alice, and I see them as having huge significance to me. But the funny thing going there was I initially thought, oh, if I could spend more time there and I could maybe make a larger assembled plastic work. But Mexico City is spotless in some of the areas. it's incredibly thoroughly cleaned daily by people going around and picking up trash and litter.
Oh, wow.
And it's just interesting, like These are the small differences that I find interesting in traveling to different places, but then also as an artist, I find really interesting, especially with working with found material. It's just a physical way of engaging with my environment. And like in London, for example, there's a huge amount of odds and ends on the street and things you can rip off a wall and pull into a piece, but Mexico City is different with found plastic and things like that.
So you have to get a residency there.
Yeah, yeah.
Guadalajara.
Or a job as a bin man.
Or a job. Yeah. Yeah. Finally, do you have a favorite found item?
Oof.
Or what was most surprising, something you found?
I guess within the clicker?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. That narrows it down a little bit. So I guess within the St. Gallen clicker, like there were two things that I, two objects that I kind of refer to quite a lot that I found interesting to work with. Mm-hmm. And one was the keys from the keyboards, because we went into the electronics basement and there were all these big wooden bins of disused keyboards that had been thrown away. And with those, I found them really interesting in terms of touch, because it made me think of all these emails that had been sent over the years, all these awkward conversations that had passed through the keyboards, and how I was then kind of working with these things. I mean, you think about it, someone who works at a desk every day, like how often they touch this instrument, how much a part of their lives it is. So I found those really kind of interesting to work with, especially with this project where it was, the idea was that it was summing up the university at this particular point in time. And I felt like with the keyboards, what it did was it reached towards a broader history. And then in terms of leveling social hierarchies and different uses, I've pet bottle caps and the bottle cap bins were really something new to me, because I don't see those in the UK. But also I liked thinking about it with these bottle caps, that everyone was drinking from the bottles, different departments, different students studying different subjects, and that they all ended up in these bins with their DNA on these different bottle caps that I was going through and collecting. And there was something about that that I found very like immediate and direct, and also very interesting in terms of socially how that worked.
And kind of a time capsule.
Yeah,
cool. Thanks for being here. We're looking for a job for you in Mexico.
Yeah, that would be
amazing.
Thank
you so much, Louis Davison and Tim Kramer. And we hear us again at Square Talks.
Thank you.